When it comes to the strategy of Putin in this war, there are many people in the West, even Russians, the far right Russians, are criticizing Putin for his strategy in this war because they believe that as long as this war is going on and on, it may bring some sort of new escalations to this war and direct confrontation between NATO and Russia. How do you find this? Do you think that's possible that at the end of the day we see some sort of direct confrontation between NATO and Russia?
Well, it is possible. I mean, the problem is that today the Western countries don't see any exit to this conflict. They are pushing new equipment, they are pushing ammunition and all that, and they see that it doesn't work. And that's why you have suddenly Emmanuel Macron, the French president, who says that we can say troops there over there. But I think the European leadership is extremely irrational, I would say, in many ways. And I think, despite the fact that the US started, in fact, this conflict. And in fact, the US was instrumental in starting the or setting the scene for this conflict to happen, in fact, because that's, in fact, this conflict is in their interest. To weaken Russia is in the interest of the US, not in the interest of the EU, of the European countries. And by the way, a couple of days ago, Josep Borrell, who is the head of the European Union foreign policy, said that in fact, Europe is fighting Russia in order to support US objectives. Or US interest, sorry, US interest. So we see that there is in Europe a sense that they support US interests at large, that may include European interests as well, but the support is said explicitly US interests. So meaning that there is a sense in Europe that we have to fight this war. In the US, people start to think twice because, first of all, they have a presidential election that is coming up, and they see that they will start this election with no success at all. Basically, the Biden started its mandate with the problem of Afghanistan, and he sees that even in Gaza, the US has no leverage on Netanyahu to solve the humanitarian situation in Gaza, and that in fact, US has lost its influence. And in Ukraine, the US was instrumental in supporting this conflict. And today, they see that the conflict is getting out of their hand. And that suddenly France and Germany and Lithuania or whatever Baltic state is starting to wage their own war. So there is a sense in the US that things should be calmed down a little bit. And I have the feeling that although it's possible to have NATO armies, or would say armies of NATO countries, I should formulate it that way, you may have armies of NATO countries confronting the Russians, US wants to prevent NATO to be involved. And I think it's also important what a lot of commentators forget this distinction. There is a distinction between a NATO country that is involved, and you have NATO countries involved already now in Ukraine by having troops. We know that France and UK, for instance, They have personnel in Ukraine that helps even targeting of Russian targets. So they are directly involved already now. That has to be clear. So they may not have combat units, but they have units designed to help the Ukrainians to target Russian troops. And they are helping in targeting, like the Scalp or Storm Shadow missiles or cruise missiles that are that have been delivered to Ukrainians. These are also managed by French and UK or British crews. So meaning that you may have NATO or NATO countries involved in that, but NATO as an organization, even if it has a presence in Ukraine, it is not involved as an organization. I think it's important to make this distinction. And in the NATO, a lot of people don't understand very well NATO. NATO is not like the EU or even the United Nations. In the United Nations, you have 195 countries that are basically equals. Some are more equal than others. These are the one of the Security Council and the P5, basically, they are a little bit more equal than others. But basically, all the countries are equal. And they have to decide collectively. In the European Union, it's different because the European Union is led by the European Commission. The European Commission is an unelected body that decides for the European Union. So basically, the European Union is an organization that is led by people who are unelected and who decide for people who are basically striving democracy. But that's another issue. In the NATO was created in 1949 in order to provide to the European countries the US nuclear umbrella. That means that in the NATO, you have a primus inter pares, which is the United States, because the United States provides the umbrella. And even if the decisions in the Military Council are decided unanimously, or they have to be decided unanimously, you will see that the US, in fact, is the maestro. This is the one who makes things happen or not. And this is and for a simple reason that, as I said, they are the one who provide the rationale for NATO to exist. In fact, that's for that reason, the military commander of NATO will always be an American for that precise reason. If you look at Jens Stoltenberg, he's only a secretary general. He's not the director. You notice that. He cannot make decisions. He only the secretary general. That means he represents the different members of the alliance, basically the allied countries, but he cannot decide upon them, cannot make any decision. Jens Stoltenberg can say whatever he wants. This is not a decision. I mean, he can make administrative decisions, but he cannot make operational decisions. So as the Ursula von der Leyen, the opposite, in the European Commission, she can make decision, but not Stoltenberg. And it's very important to notice. The one who makes decision in the in the NATO in the NATO, in fact, is Joe Biden. In fact, this is that. Of course, he needs to have the agreement of all the other members, but basically, if the US is not on board, nothing will happen at all. So meaning that, and you can see right now that I mentioned different terrorist attacks that were waged against Russia by probably Ukrainians. I mean, most probably Ukrainians, not probably, waged by Ukrainians, in fact, against Russia. And you can see that the US has tried to take influence and tried to make Zelensky to calm down and to stop, for instance, targeting oil refineries and all that. And you may even see that the US has tried to have removed some Russian banks from the sanction list, for instance, very recently, because apparently the US understands that the situation can go very quickly out of hand, and they tried to regain some kind of control and try to calm down their European friends. And I have no crystal ball, but I can assume that the Americans will make every effort to avoid an escalation in Ukraine. Because, first of all, the NATO as an organization and as individual countries are not ready to fight Russia. We have seen the recent report that the artillery production and missile production in Russia outpassed the whole NATO production by three times. So Russia has definitely a war industry that works much better. And why does it work better? It's not because the Russians are smarter. It's just because the Russian military industrial complex is still at least partially state-owned, meaning that this is a complex that doesn't work based on profit, but based on national interest. And therefore, the only problem for the Russian government will be to find manpower to run the factories. This is the only problem. But they will not have problem to run the production lines. While on the other side, if you go on the Western side, since most of countries have a privatized military industrial complex that works based on profit. So basically, people say, well, I don't want to create a new factory just to produce shells that will be used just for 2 months, and then you have a peace agreement, because who will pay for this new factory? And all that. So this is the kind of thinking that affects the European production. As a result, although we can assume that private industry is in theory more reactive than state-owned industries, the reality in the military industrial complex is slightly different, because again, it's when it's based on national interests, then it's easier to step up the production, while on the West it will not be able. As a result, if the NATO as an organization, or if individual countries would start confronting Russia on the ground, maybe they can achieve some success. I don't know. This is then the law of warfare that will speak. But the strategic approach is that the Europeans are not ready for this kind of war. They don't have the potential, and they're not ready. They don't have the capacity. They may have capabilities, but they don't have the capacity of doing that. And that's the reason why I think the Americans are aware of that, and probably a little bit more realistic than the Europeans on that. And I think that the Americans will try to avoid such a conflict. We could add to this that in addition to that, you have, of course, the risk of going into a nuclear war. And that's a problem that may involve the US. So let's assume you have France or Poland, let's say, that start a war in Russia, and suddenly Russia gets the advantage and threatens Warsaw or a city in Romania, I don't know. Then the Poles will ask for a nuclear missile from the US. So the US might be involved in a conflict that it didn't want in the first instance. So that's the reason why I think the US, despite all the criticism we can have against the US for having let's say put oil on the fire in the beginning of the conflict and in fact have created the condition for having this conflict. But today, probably the US is probably the force that may help to not to solve, but to avoid an escalation, let's say that way.
Just to wrap up this session, I want to talk about Europe and how Europe has hurt during this conflict. And we don't see anything coming from European leaders talking about this, especially from Germany, from Italy, from France. Even Macron, he was the guy who was trying to make some sort of agreement when this conflict started. Right now, he's totally different. He has a totally different manner toward this conflict, toward Russia. At the end of the day, we're gonna have some sort of negotiations to put an end to this conflict. But when it comes to Europe, how do you see the future of Europe? Because without Russia, if we take out Russia out of Europe, there would be tremendous problems for Europe in terms of energy, in terms of security. And how do you see Europe managing these problems in that region?
Well, in fact, we start that already. We see that there is, at least in Germany had a concept of, since the late 60s, by the way, Germany imports its energy from Russia. And it has done so consistently since the late 60s. And even during the Cold War, at no point in time, the Russians stopped to provide energy. And they provide cheap energy, reliable energy, and it did that. So the idea of cutting this link with Russia was in itself totally irrational. But of course, but it was done. The thing is that what we can see is that the European leadership is in fact is a dogmatic leadership. It assumes that Russia is a dictatorship, and therefore it's right to fight a dictatorship, and period. So they don't really care about what is the cost of that. By the way, we have to understand that several sanctions, not all of them, but several sanctions, like sanctions on the oil products, sanctions on the SWIFT, this interbanking agreement that allows payment between banks, and Russia was expelled from that system in February or March 2022. For those systems, for instance, the US advised Europe not to take these sanctions. They advise them not to take sanctions on the oil market because they would see that these sanctions would affect the whole market. And as a matter of fact, in fact, if you cannot see Europe as an isolated market. If you start cutting the supply in oil, that means that the oil have to be taken somewhere else. And as a result, you will have an impact on the supply and the demand of oil, and therefore you will have an increase in price. I mean, any student in a primary school would understand that, but not European leaders. And I remember having seen it was in the Bloomberg or so in the early, that was late 2021, when the West started to elaborate a few scenarios for sanctions. And the West discouraged or tried to discourage the US started to discourage Europeans to take sanctions on the oil market, on the oil product. So the Europeans went ahead without considering the impact. But we also have to understand that their basis for thinking was the fact that Russia had a very weak economy, and that the Russia economy would collapse within days. I remind you what I just said about the French Minister of Economy, who said the sanctions work and Russia will collapse. So they were convinced about this. And this is exactly the kind of mistake this leadership goes into, and it cannot go backwards, because going backwards would be a recognition, an admission that you made wrong decisions. And you can make a wrong decision when you buy a pair of shoes, but when you start to making decisions that will affect your whole economy, that means that you didn't take into consideration all aspects. So then, therefore, your government basically has made a huge mistake. So nobody wants to acknowledge that. But recently, as Emmanuel Macron announced that he was ready to send troops in Ukraine, he also said at the same time that France was entering a war economy. So there is a sense, and when you see now the results, and this is a huge debate, of course, the politicians don't want to relate that to the sanctions. But the fact of the matter is that what we see today in France and Germany is a collapse, which is due to the lack of the lack of competitiveness. And you see a lot of companies, German companies, for instance, are in fact relocating their production facilities to China. So that means that you have an increase in unemployment in Germany, and you have, at the same time, you have a collapse of the industrial network in Germany because of the lack of competitiveness. Or the increase, the productivity is in fact no longer competitive with what you can see in other parts of the world. So they start to realize that. They start to realize that they are in a war economy, and they spend so much to support the economy. And by the way, we have also to remember that the Ukrainian crisis has come after the coronavirus crisis in Europe, where you had a lot of government support to the industry. So you have billions, hundreds of billions that have been spent in trying to support the economy during the COVID crisis. And now you have almost the same problem coming to support Ukraine. And the thing is that at the end, you have to find the money somewhere. And then you have an increase, although all the government, especially in France, they promised there wouldn't be no increase in taxes. But the fact of the matter is that at one point you need to increase your taxes because you need more money. And therefore the trust in the government is plummeting in all the countries in all Europe. And that gives a change in the sense that all those who were critical against the regimes or the governments, which is in essence the right wing and sometimes extreme right wing, tend to be supported by the population. So we are facing a very strange situation, that these governments who wanted to fight the dictatorship in Russia and fight for democracy and fight for values and all that, they are in fact promoting systems that are no longer in tune with democratic values, because there is a total lack of trust into the government. So we are, and nobody wants to acknowledge, because it would be easy to acknowledge that it is the result of wrong decisions, but they don't want to acknowledge that. And I think this is probably the fate of Europe, and we'll probably see a collapse. I mean, Germany is certainly going towards a collapse. Now you have a delegation going to China with all the CEOs of Germany, meaning that there is a strong interest in Germany to have better relationship with China. But the problem is that China has been declared as an enemy by the European Union and by NATO. So we are in a situation, we put ourselves in a situation where we have enemies all around us. So it was just oversimplistic to think that we could try to make Russia collapse without provoking an improved relationship between China and Russia. I mean, how come didn't we come to this idea? We thought, and I remember having those experts on China saying, well, but China hates the Russians hate the Chinese, and they have so things, the divergence, and they will never be in a sustainable agreement. And what we have seen in 2 years, exactly the opposite. So we are going from false assessments to wrong assessments to other wrong assessments, and all that one leads to the other. And I think we, if nobody tries to come back to the reality, we are in a down a downgoing spiral, in fact.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Great pleasure to talk with you. I think these talks are so crucial, so important for the future of Europe, for the future of here in Brazil, for the future of the world, for the future of the United States, Russia, China, all of us.
Well, I think it's even so important because your country, I mean, we haven't talked about the BRICS and all that, but in fact, this is the consequence of that conflict, that you see the importance, the growing importance of the BRICS, the growing importance of the role, not only in economic terms, but also in political terms. And we see this role, in fact, although Brazil is not directly involved, but it's still a member of the BRICS that brought the Israel case in front of the International Court of Justice, because South Africa is one of the components of the BRICS. So we see the growing importance of what some call the Global South, of which the BRICS is a central piece. So there is definitely an increased role of the southern hemisphere, in fact. And at the same time, we see the decline of the northern hemisphere in all sense of the word. We have a decline in industrial production, the decline in creativity, the decline in political influence, the decline in also preserving values. Because when we talk about, and I was this morning in the European Parliament talking to a Italo-French parliamentary, and he was talking about defending values. Okay, we didn't elaborate on that because we had no time to do that. But when he talks about defending, which values are we talking about? Because the value we tend to defend are not at all those who we used to defend, and not at all those who are defended by the southern part of the globe. So we see a growing mismatch between the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere. And we see that the southern hemisphere grows in importance also because of its economic power and political power, meaning that it gains credibility, it gains also more trust by the rest of the world. And as a result, yes, I don't want to elaborate because I see that you probably want to end your show at one point, but we have talked about the conflict in itself and its impact on Europe and all that, but there are a huge amount of consideration we can make about the role of this conflict in the whole balance of the world. And I think this conflict, because of the mismanagement of the West, this conflict will be, we have historical proportion, I think, much more than the conflict we may have seen in Europe, like in the in ex-Yugoslavia and all that, which are important in themselves, but these are conflicts that have regional dimension, if you want. The Ukrainian conflict, although it's regional in nature or in substance, it gained global importance because of the impact of the mismanagement of the West. And that's what probably needs to be addressed at one point, where I'm ready to discuss that further with you anytime. And that was a pleasure to be with you tonight.